It's Wednesday, November 18th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We've got a lot of things to get to before we get to the meat and potatoes of our daily podcast today, including a reference to David Letterman's show. We've got video up on the blog at stash.normal.org. Dave, on Monday night, made reference to Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe, and the joke went like this.
Big story out in the Pacific Northwest, out there in Portland, Oregon. They opened up a marijuana cafe. I know it sounds like a great idea. I know people who've been there. They said it's awful. The waiters can never remember your order. What? What? I'm sorry.
So congratulations go out to Madeline Martinez and all the folks doing the hard work there with Oregon Normal in Portland to make this cannabis cafe spread all across the news. Madeline's been interviewed just this week by the Times of London, by Al Jazeera, and I directed a phone call to her today from USA Today, so expect plenty more on this Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe. We'll be there this Saturday for Normal Show Live. I've just invested in some new technology through the folks at Clear Wireless that should give us 4G broadband speeds and therefore a good connection there, so we can bring you all of the live happenings there from the First in the Nation Cannabis Cafe. Also wanted to make mention of entertainment news that had come across my desk, where Cheech and Chong have announced their Get It Legal tour, and they're partnering with MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project, and most notably not with Normal. I'm a little hurt by this, with all the support that Normal and this podcast provided to Tommy Chong throughout his incarceration, as well as in helping promote the AKA Tommy Chong book and DVD through this podcast and other ways. And also, it just kind of bothers me a lot, because to me it seems like MPP sponsoring a Cheech and Chong show is a little bit like the National Organization for Women sponsoring a wet t-shirt contest. MPP has never been shy about denigrating what they consider the Cheech and Chong culture, or the effect of those of us who are cannabis consumers on their projects to change marijuana policy. They're all about getting wins in the political game, but they're not too fond of being associated with what they would call stoner culture. So for Cheech and Chong to be partnering up with MPP seems a little surprising to me. Maybe MPP has changed their tune, and now they like those of us who openly like to smoke marijuana. I'll keep you posted. The more information I get, I'll reveal it here on the Stash. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your cannabis community calendar, and then a look at our hemp headlines, including San Diego, where District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis has a problem in her own ranks. We take a look at the state of Wisconsin, where Democratic lawmakers are now coming out in support of the Jackie Rickert Medical Marijuana Act. and some reefer madness from the DEA in the wake of the AMA's reversal on smoked cannabis as medicine. It's Irie Wednesday for our Daily Toker Tunes, and Johnny Reefer Seed brings us a great tune from Iowa City, Iowa, and the band Public Property and their song No Respect. And it's time for our cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll be discussing the effect of stress on the human body and the use of cannabis to treat it, plus a little bit of a look at the history of the medical uses of marijuana. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Fat and long, pack me a bowl or fill me a bong. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. On Thursday, November 19th, Philly Normal will be having their open meeting at the A Space, 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Also on Thursday, Oberlin College Normal in Ohio will be having their monthly meeting with special guest Sharon Neufer from North Ohio Normal speaking to the group. On Friday, November 20th, Philly Normal makes an appearance on the 420 Punk Show. On Saturday, November 21st, Normal Show Live is on the air at live.normal.org, coming to you direct and live from Oregon Normal's world-famous Cannabis Cafe. And on Sunday, November 22nd, there is a medical cannabis dispensary law workshop worth 5 CLE credits for attorneys in the Sheraton Los Angeles Downtown Hotel in L.A. For more information, check out cumansummers.com. That's cumansommers.com. And next week, Monday, November 23rd, Kansas City Normal has their meeting, and Tuesday, November 24th, Arkansas Normal will be holding their meeting. For more information on all of these meetings, including websites, contact information, emails, phone numbers, maps, and more details, check out our calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Are you good?
It's a Normal shout-out.
For our shout-out today, we're going to continue our Sesame Street theme. For the past 2 days, I've been shouting out to states that start with the letter N. Today, I'm going to make a shout-out to states that have a letter D in their name. So all of you listening in Colorado, Idaho, Delaware, North Dakota, or South Dakota, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll get you involved with forming a Normal chapter. Now, those of you in Colorado are already pretty lucky. There's a few Normal chapters active and working there in the Denver and Boulder areas. But Colorado is a big state, so if you're anywhere in the Colorado Springs, the Durango, any of these areas that aren't served by a Normal chapter, get in touch with me at stash@normal.org. Of course, Idaho is close to my heart, being the state of my birth, and I'm looking to start chapters there in the Boise area, the Lewiston area, and the Idaho Falls Pocatello area. So again, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Delaware is also special to my heart. I'd love to have a Normal chapter there. South Dakota's got a great chapter at sodacnormal.org, but we could always form more chapters or get more people to join that chapter. And North Dakota doesn't have, or to the best of my knowledge, has never had a Normal chapter. So again, anyone in those Northern Plains states, please send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll get you involved with organizing a Normal chapter in your area.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our NORML daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. San Diego DA Dumanis' deputy belongs to Medical Marijuana Collective. From 10 News, San Diego. A judge ruled the identity of a deputy district attorney who has admitted to being a member of a marijuana collective must be released. On Tuesday, Deputy District Attorney James Pitts confirmed his membership in the now-defunct Amsterdam Alternative Care. The collective was one of several shut down after being raided last September. San Diego resident and Navy veteran Jovan Jackson is being charged with several counts, including possession of medical marijuana and the sale of medical marijuana. If found guilty, Jackson could spend several years in prison. San Diego defense attorney Gretchen Von Helms said it's easy to see why Jackson's defense wants to call Pitts as a defense witness. Quote, if the defense attorney can say, look, my client's just doing what your deputy DAs are doing, how in the heck do you prosecute someone like this? That's a great strategy for the defense attorney, end quote, said Von Helms. Quote, what you want to show is that all sorts of normal people utilize medical marijuana. They do so as lawfully as they can, end quote. Ms. District Attorney Dumanis, even your own deputy DA agrees with Prop 215 and uses medical marijuana in accordance with the law. Will you do the sensible thing and call off your crusade against medical marijuana? Or will you do the petty thing and fire your deputy district attorney? Either way, it works out well for us. Obviously, we'd be thrilled with ending the crusade, but even if she fires Pitts, she opens San Diego up to a lawsuit from a bitter former deputy DA. Wisconsin Democrats fighting for medical marijuana. Madison, Wisconsin. Legalizing medical marijuana will ease the cancer patient's pain and help others who are suffering, supporters of legalization argued Monday. Two Democratic state lawmakers, advocates, and those fighting chronic diseases said at a news conference there is momentum nationwide to decriminalize the use of marijuana for medical reasons. They pointed to Governor Jim Doyle's comments last month in support of legalizing medical marijuana for people who have a doctor's prescription. Also, the American Medical Association called last week for a federal review of marijuana's status as a controlled substance to make it easier to do research that could lead to the development of marijuana-based medicines. Everyone knows someone who would benefit if the law were changed, said Jackie Rickert, founder of Is My Medicine Legal Yet? She suffers from Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and reflexive sympathetic dystrophy, bone and joint diseases that limit movement and lead to painful muscle spasms. Marijuana eases the pain, she said. Under the measure co-sponsored by State Representative Mark Pocan, Democrat of Madison, and State Senator Joe Erpenbach, Democrat of Waunakee, a person would need a prescription from a doctor to receive marijuana, which could either be grown at home or obtained through a licensed nonprofit dispensary. The bill is up for a hearing December 15th.
Ah, my first piece of press where a lawmaker points to the American Medical Association's reversal on smoked cannabis. It's going to be fun posting more of these as the year winds down. I got to meet Jackie Rickert in Madison this year. She is a tenacious woman, and her bill needs to be passed this year. Already one of the prominent medical marijuana activists I met in Madison has passed away, waiting for this legislation. This is not an issue that needs more study or delays. To get involved, contact Madison Normal at madisonnormal.org or Is My Medicine Legal Yet at immly.org.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
It revises anti-medical marijuana webpage and removes AMA reference. Why, just yesterday, I was telling you about the DEA's website called Exposing the Myth of Smoked Medical Marijuana, where they had a question, does marijuana have any medical value? And even after the AMA reversing their stance on smoked cannabis, they still had the line, "The American Medical Association recommends that marijuana remain a Schedule I controlled substance." Well, today, when you go to that same link, does marijuana have any medical value? The AMA reference is gone. Congratulations to the folks at LEAP who spearheaded the campaign to harass the DEA about it. Though, if you want to believe it was the fast response of the loyal frontline battle grunts in the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, known as stashers, that provided the bump that put the DEA over the edge, well, I'm not going to disabuse you of that notion. Whatever keeps you writing to your government is fine with me. But the rest of the document needs some serious fixing, too, for there's still a lot of reefer madness in it.
The Institute of Medicine conducted a comprehensive study in 1999 to assess the potential health benefits of marijuana and its constituent cannabinoids. The study concluded that smoking marijuana is not recommended for the treatment of any disease condition. In addition, there are more effective medications currently available. For those reasons, the Institute of Medicine concluded that there is little future in smoked marijuana as a medically approved medication.
See? The AMA in 2009 recognizes, quote, "Smoked cannabis reduces neuropathic pain, improves appetite and caloric intake, especially in patients with reduced muscle mass, and may relieve spasticity and pain in patients with multiple sclerosis," end quote. So the DEA removes that current reference and replaces it with a contrary reference from a decade ago. I often win arguments this way, like my trivia contest, where I guessed that there were 9 planets, the 49ers had the most Super Bowl trophies, and Bill Clinton was the president. But it is nice to know that the DEA recognizes that decade-old reference from the Institute of Medicine's 1999 study entitled Marijuana and Medicine, Assessing the Science Base. For it, too, recognizes that, quote, "Scientific data include the potential therapeutic value of cannabinoid drugs, primarily THC, for pain relief, control of nausea and vomiting, and appetite stimulation," end quote. It also rebukes the DEA's statement that, quote, "smoking marijuana is not recommended for the treatment of any disease condition," end quote, when the Institute of Medicine study concludes, quote, "for certain patients, such as the terminally ill or those with debilitating symptoms, the long-term risks of smoked marijuana are not of great concern," end quote. It's nice to see that the DEA cites the 1999 Institute of Medicine study, especially when they claim,
"Is marijuana a gateway drug? Yes. Among marijuana's most harmful consequences is its role in leading to the use of other illegal drugs like heroin and cocaine."
While the Institute of Medicine study that they cited earlier says, quote, there is no conclusive evidence that the drug effects of marijuana are causally linked to the subsequent abuse of other illicit drugs, end quote.
In other studies, smoked marijuana has been shown to cause a variety of health problems, including cancer, respiratory problems, increased heart rate, loss of motor skills, and increased heart rate.
And not only that, I also hear it can cause increased heart rate. But not cancer. In fact, cannabis users show a reduced risk of head, neck, and lung cancers compared to non-using controls. And not respiratory problems, at least not seriously debilitating problems like emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And not a loss of motor skills in any permanent or even long-lasting way. I mean, sure, you don't smoke a blunt and then see how you're going to do on the driver's test, but a couple hours later and you're no worse to drive than anyone else. But I do hear it can cause an increased heart rate, an increase about the same as walking up a flight of stairs.
It's also important to realize that the campaign to allow marijuana to be used as medicine is a tactical maneuver in an overall strategy to completely legalize all drugs. The New York Times interviewed Ethan Nadelman when asked, "Will it help lead toward marijuana legalization?" Mr. Nadelman said, quote, "I hope so," end quote.
This tactical maneuver has always interested me. According to the DEA, Ethan Nadelman and the rest of us legalizers are following this strategy. One, scenario. All currently illicit drugs are illegal. Two, goal. Legalize all currently illicit drugs. Three, tactic. Convince voters that they should make one currently illicit drug available to very sick or disabled people under very strict conditions. And four, the premise? Once voters are accustomed to sick people using one drug, they'll decide that all people should be able to use all drugs. How exactly does that work? How is it that Joe Q. Public sees a cancer patient smoking a joint and decides, you know, if they put it up to an initiative to put meth-flavored lollipops in the 7-Eleven, I'll vote for it? The very notion that medical marijuana is a Trojan horse is both an insult to the public's intelligence and an endorsement of the legalization we seek. Are they really suggesting that the only way they can keep the public from rejecting prohibition as a policy is to make sure people in pain don't smoke pot? The fact that they think a public exposed to a non-punitive regulatory solution to drug control will be inexorably drawn to more of those non-punitive regulatory solutions for more people and other drugs just shows you how bankrupt prohibitionist ideology is. They can't support it with reason. They can only support it through the barrel of a cop's gun. It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, dancehall, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. When you think of reggae, the last thing you think about are the cornfields of Iowa. Hailing from Iowa City, Iowa, comes Public Property, one of the country's best reggae bands around today. Having shared the stage and recording studio with reggae legends such as Toots Hibbert of Toots and the Maytals on their latest CD, Public Property is currently barnstorming the U.S., sharing their unique brand of Midwest reggae, ska, and hip-hop to the delight of music fans all over. The Irie Wednesday Toker tune of the day is from their second CD, What's Going Down, a CD complete with rich harmonies, smooth rhymes, and exceptionally dope beats. The tune entitled No Respect is all about rolling up a spliff and washing your troubles away. You can check out Public Property at publicprop.com and myspace.com/publicprop. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. So do like Public Property advises in this song. Roll me up a spliff, I want to get lit. And enjoy the normal Daily Audio Stash Toker tune of the day, No Respect.
Crack the kid, I wanna skank up my head. to ask somebody, who is your friend?
How's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 420 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm normal.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid? And which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science.
We've reached the middle of another week, and that means time for another dose of our cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who is so generous to join us today, feeling a little bit under the weather, but glad to have you here, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay under the circumstances. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. You know, I was at the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference last weekend in New Mexico. And at one of the sessions, I was listening to, I think it was a man from Australia, talking about a study that had been done in the 70s. And I was just going to ask you about this and see if you knew about it, called the Rat Park Study. Does that ring a bell?
I do have a memory of that.
Yeah. Interesting. As he described it, it had to do with, you know, taking a look at the nature of addiction in rats to a sweetened morphine, and put, you know, some of the rats in a really nice, you know, luxury setting, rat park. And then the other rats were in rat slum, I guess you would call it. And of course, the rat slum rats had much higher rates of the use of the sweetened morphine. I just thought that was an interesting study. And I was wondering if you could tell us any more about it, if you knew more about it.
Absolutely. Stanton Peel has elaborated on this in a lot of his work, just to point out that despite a lot of interesting data on genetics of addiction, the environment is really key. And in that study, it's literally an analog to, you know, growing up in a place where there's nothing to do versus growing up in a place where there's lots and lots of fun to have. And what's intriguing, of course, is the more stimulating behaviors you can engage in, the more fun environmental stimuli you have, the better things turn out for you, even with the rats who are using that morphine. They don't seem to run into that lethargic, weird, dependent look that the other rats got. And the intrigue of that is morphine is, you know, literally one of our most addictive drugs. Opiate drugs tend to get, you know, considered these incredibly strong physiological sources of addiction. And there were literally plenty of rats in that study that used only occasionally or not at all, simply because they had so many other interests, in a sense, so many other neat things to do in the environment that they were in. So I think that that's a wonderful lesson for us. What's intriguing now is that's been adapted to a new therapy called behavioral activation, and it's only applied to a few different disorders, but as you can imagine, it's really great for depression, and it's showing a lot of promise with some alcohol problems, and another colleague of mine is applying it to eating disorders. And it sounds completely lame, but it's literally get out and go do fun stuff. And it's curious because the treatment manuals, you know, make it clear how much we get caught in our sort of everyday rigmarole. And the recommendations are literally things like, you know, make sure you're out of bed by 9 and make sure you plan something fun to do and make sure you're doing things that are consistent with your values. And when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, this is just going to be one giant party or something like that. And that's not it at all, because people usually tend to find that, you know, they don't enjoy their lives if that's all they do. It's really about getting in touch with the things that you value and then making sure you go out and really do stuff. And it's not all just work, work, work. It's make sure you spend time with people, make sure you go outside, make sure you get a chance to exercise. And it's funny how it sidesteps all the cognitive things that we thought were such a big deal in the 90s, where you have to think about how you think about things and much more just sit down, plan your day, and then go work your plan, so to speak. And symptoms of depression lift just tremendously. It looks like problematic levels of drinking can improve in some pilot studies. And my colleague Drew Anderson is making it seem like folks are less likely to, you know, make themselves throw up or do other maladaptive things with food as well.
You know, I was fascinated by that idea of that study and how he was describing it. And of course, he was describing, you know, morphine-dependent rats, which always puts me in the mind of, you know, what does a rat junkie look like? But the other thing is that I always try to think in my mind how things might relate to cannabis or cannabis reform. And the first thing that popped into my mind is the drug testing that we do in schools for kids that want to get into extracurricular activities. You know, talk about giving them less to do. It seemed to me that would be a harmful thing. And don't the data back me up on that a little bit?
In fact, I brought this up at the ONDCP's big summit on urine screening in the schools, and I was, you know, ridiculed to death. But the data are very much consistent with the idea that, particularly among teens, if you have one activity that can be enough to buffer you against negative consequences, it doesn't always mean you'll never try. And of course, that's the thing that they get so worked up about. But folks who are good at singing in the choir or playing in a band or some kind of sport, maybe not snowboarding, you know, generally end up with enough skills, social contact, abilities, exercise, and interest that even if they do try cannabis before we would recommend, they don't become consistent regular users in a maladaptive way, the way folks who really don't have those connections can often run into problems. And then the absolute, you know, irony of then saying, hey, you tested positive for THC, now you can't, you know, be in the debate club, which, you know, just blows my mind, because that could be the thing that makes the difference between staying home all day, just, you know, talking to the bong and actually going out and having a fulfilling life and improving your debate skills and getting ready to change the laws.
Yeah, it's something I think about a lot as far as how we treat cannabis in this country, that the more we try to prohibit it, the worse we make the problems. Now, another thing that happened last week, and we talked about this a little bit, was that stunning reversal by the American Medical Association on the, first of all, recognizing that smoked cannabis, and they use the word smoked, has medical efficacy, and their recommendation to move it out of Schedule 1. And, you know, that takes us back to talking about, you know, just medical marijuana itself. And this is kind of, you know, the American Medical Association being against cannabis as medicine is a relatively new phenomenon as far as cannabis and medicine goes. And I was wondering if you could tell folks just a little bit about, you know, prior to our, you know, zeal to prohibit cannabis, how marijuana was used medically in history.
I mean, this is such a hoot because I definitely have acquaintances who think medical cannabis was invented in 1990. You know, just literally thousands of years ago, folks in, you know, what are now Asian countries were using medical cannabis as recommended by the physicians of that era. So generally, in 2737 BC, Emperor Shenang gets credit for spreading the word about medical marijuana. My friend Tony DeBlasi, who's an expert in Asian history, points out that Shenang is really more of a mythical emperor, and he's sort of the father of all of agriculture of China. So I shouldn't take this too seriously, like he was one guy like Johnny Potseed or something. Nevertheless, he prescribed medical marijuana for many of the things we still use it for today, rheumatism, arthritis, general pain. He also, you know, had to prescribe it for things that really, you know, it probably wasn't much help for, but that was all they had back then. So apparently he recommended it for flatulence. I have no idea what that must have done other than maybe make you not care about.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're talking literally, you know, 5,000 years ago, the progression from Asian countries across over to European countries and things like that. We see ancient Rome, ancient Greece, definitely mentioning the use of marijuana as an analgesic. Pliny the Elder in the natural history, which must have been around, you know, we're talking maybe 70 AD, mentions marijuana's analgesic effects. Plutarch later on, and then a big physician in Nero's army in the year 70 also mentioned it in his pharmacopoeia, and basically Greek physician Galen, who everybody thinks of as sort of the father of modern medicine, mentions medical cannabis as well, and had some novel things about appetite that hadn't been proposed before. And so we're talking about, you know, literally medical uses that go back before we knew what aspirin was, you know, mm-hmm. before we knew any of these other things. The fun thing too is how, it sort of spread from one place to another. It looks like, medical cannabis was a big source of help during childbirth in Jerusalem around 300 AD. And then slowly but surely everything spread west. And, by, you know, the 1700s here in the States, you know, medical cannabis was in the New England dispensary. Folks like Benjamin Franklin, Queen Elizabeth, you know, people like that, if they aren't documented using it, at least certainly had it available. And then, you know, by the mid-1800s, we've got the famous Irish physician O'Shaughnessy, who's mentioning in, you know, regular English medical journals how the tinctures can be extremely helpful for pretty much all the disorders we still use it for today. And what's fun is that, you know, to think that here's a drug that's been used for literally thousands of years with an amazing safety record and something that we can all, you know, essentially rely on that's, you know, going to be part of history from here on out, clearly has an amazing background and something we can all hope to work to make available to us now today.
Yeah. And, you know, we point back to the early 20th century and late 19th century where we first get the Industrial Revolution happening, and the companies involved that are still big pharmaceutical companies today had their preparations of cannabis tinctures and bottles of cannabis and powdered cannabis that you could buy. And every time we bring that up, sometimes our opponents, the people who are against medical marijuana, will say, well, yeah, they sold all sorts of snake oil tonics back then, things that would blind you and cure, you know, warts and all that kind of stuff. So why is it that the other snake oils of the late 19th century were so bad, and how come cannabis gets the bad rap for them?
Well, the funny thing is, a lot of those things were actually just superb. They really did exactly what they were designed to do, but they also had incredible concentrations of alcohol and opium.
Oh.
And unfortunately, created dependence in a way that, made it impractical to use them. And that's what was the big reaction against, when we started passing laws just saying, look, you have to have on the label what's in here. The fact that cannabis didn't get more popular as a tincture, I think back then, was partly a product of just inconsistency in concentration. We didn't have high THC strains. We didn't, understand that the THC degrades if it's stored improperly. And so that, made the cannabis medicines look like they were kind of hit and miss. The funny thing is nobody really had to say, oh, we're going to make all these snake oil things illegal, so much as just say, put on the label what's in there. And suddenly people started turning away in mass, for all those opiate meds. So that was, an intriguing thing that, you know, basically the informed consumer can, what a surprise, make, credible decisions him or herself. And in fact, we're just asking for that opportunity to do that again today. If, cannabis extracts had been more, regular, less alcoholic, and in a sense potentially more potent, I bet they would have hung on a little stronger.
Hmm. Yeah, so just a matter of timing, I guess. Now, with the recommendation that the AMA makes that we reschedule cannabis, of course, they made that in the context of saying we need to increase the research. You know, we need to do more research on this. And like you mentioned, the drug's been used for thousands of years with an amazing safety record. And it almost seems like every season I pick up one or two headlines of some malfeasance going on at the FDA. What do you think about the need for this FDA approval for cannabis?
I feel like it's only fair given what we put all other medications through. But when the idea of FDA approval first got popular, we didn't go back and make them run tests on aspirin and take aspirin off the market until those were done. You know, it was really all about trying to protect folks against brand new medications that had never been used before and had no long-term data and could create harms that we hadn't anticipated. The thalidomide scare from back in the day when pregnant women would take this medication to help them sleep and suddenly give birth to kids who had no hands and feet. Of course we want to sidestep that. That sounds just absolutely horrifying. Nevertheless, that was a drug that had been around for literally only a couple of years before we found out. Cannabis, it's been around for 5,000 years medicinally and at least 8,000 as hemp. Surely we don't need more data on its safety in order to get the point across that folks ought to be able to have this when they're feeling ill.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Erlewine, I feel the same way, and I thank you so much for joining us here when you're not feeling 100%, but you did a great job, and we appreciate you every time you join us here on The Stash.
My hearty thanks to all the listeners, and I'm hoping to turn around and feel better soon.
Yeah. Remember, if you've got questions for Dr. Erlewine, you can send them to 420research@gmail.com, and they often become the subjects of our discussions here every Wednesday on Cannabis Science. Thanks again, Dr. Mitch.
Take care, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with the reminder that Normal Show Live this Saturday will be back at Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe for another go-round. I think we've solved the technical problem, so we'll have 2 hours of live talk radio with a live studio audience. And we'll talk with Madeline Martinez, the executive director of Oregon Normal, as well as a member of Normal's board of directors, on this new shot across the bow worldwide for marijuana legalization. Also coming up on tomorrow's Daily Audio Stash, we'll bring you more exclusive audio from the Drug Policy Alliance's conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, last weekend. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.